This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We open it up on the penultimate day of November 2023. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson live, downtown Las Vegas. Bar Canada, the D. We'll get to the boys in just a second. Mike Palm's going to stop by. Drew Butler, Scott Spreitzer, professional handicapper as well. What's on tap today? We were just discussing right before the show started some Aaron Rodgers news as he catapults himself to the front page again. It's kind of a story, but kind of not. We'll get to that. College football playoff rankings. We're going to start there. We're going to have a lot of fun with championship week to get the show going here. Of course, Friday night, right next to the boys. I don't know how Amal and Dustin aren't going to Allegiant Stadium, because this rematch, Oregon-Washington, which is where the boys sit at Circa, it's 10. DraftKings, which is our partner, is sitting 9.5, so you know how to bet, right? Of course, if you want the 10, take it. Washington, you can find it. If you want to lay it, lay the 9.5. There's a distinction there with those two numbers. The winner, of course, Oregon-Washington, the rematch is going to the college football playoff, which we'll get to. 7 in the NBA. The Pistons look to make franchise history with their 15th straight loss today. The Lakers and LeBron in town. Actually, if you don't love the NBA, but you're starting to get into it as we get closer to Christmas and the holidays, the Rockets, Nuggets, and Clippers, Kings late night tonight. Two pretty good matchups. 3 games in the NHL, which is a reminder not to invite Corey Perry to the parent-teacher conferences this year. We mentioned the college football playoffs, so we should start there, boys, as the rankings dropped yesterday. I got a laugh from them all. Dustin sits stone-faced.
No,
because
my mic was off.
He sits there and just bites his tongue as I open the show, because he thinks to himself, I should be doing that. His voice shouldn't be heard right now. It should be me. So while I got a great chuckle from Amal Shaw, the guy that resents me, the big guy, didn't laugh at all. And it's not a terrible joke. It's not a great joke with PTA, but go ahead and defend yourself.
I was busy looking up ticket prices for Friday's Pac-12 championship here in Vegas, and I realized I don't know why I'm doing it. I can't go. I already have a date planned with a jungle animal that tastes like spearmint.
Okay, you're going to make the audience unpack that? Amal, would you like to help us here? Because that is a mind twister. He is so narcissistic, he believes that everybody's going to get his inside shtick. That is him. What a start.
We got a lot to unpack here. First, let's start with Dustin's little conundrum he put everybody in there. I'm assuming you mean Spearmint Rhino on Friday night?
Yes, that would be
the
one.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to the strip club.
Listen, I don't want to take all the credit. My advanced training was done at Quantico.
Also, what do you think the cheapest ticket in the house is?
It doesn't matter. You don't look right now until Friday at 4 o'clock.
Oh, because they get desperate.
Of course.
Secondary market.
Secondary market Friday at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
By the way, they can't even use the tickets in their fireplaces anymore, right? Because it's all online.
Okay, big guy, you should buy 2 tickets. If you were a good producer, you'd take them all with you to the game. So is that your plan?
Do you want to go with me after my date?
I can't go, but I appreciate it. Oh. Thank you.
Okay.
By the way, it's the last Pac-12 game here.
It is.
It will be. It will be the last Pac-12 game at Allegiant Stadium. I actually went to the Pac-12. No. I went to the Pac-12 championship game a few years ago. No, it was a bowl game. You know who it was? It was Jaden Daniels, Arizona State against Wisconsin. I sat there and I was like, Jaden Daniels stinks. His teammates hated him. He was awful in the game. I am the biggest idiot. I'm a donk.
No.
He's now a Heisman winner.
Listen.
Like, he went from a guy that was clueless at Arizona State. You know this, Amal. He looked like he didn't know which way was up.
He was terrible. We can put that on Dustin's favorite coach, Herm Edwards, potentially there. Don't forget, Antonio Pierce was on that staff as well. But there's a video, if you can find it on social media, of his former teammates at Arizona State when he said he was transferring, like throwing all his stuff in a garbage can. They're like,
he's
trash.
For him.
Oh,
yeah.
They did? I had no clue.
Yeah.
Telling you is, in person, I could tell the team hated him.
No, you nailed it. By the way, he may not win the Heisman. I have a 12-1 ticket on him. Amal is a Bo Nix ticket. I did hedge a little bit on my Bo Nix. Bo Nix is now the favorite at -175.
I don't understand how things changed from last Sunday to this week. What happened? Was there a game played this week that we missed?
I saw somebody on ESPN today. They released their
positions, their power rankings for positions, every position in college football. He had Caleb Williams 1. He had Drake May 2. Do you guys know who he had 3?
I hope it's not Jaden Daniels.
Ollie Gordon?
It's not Jaden Daniels.
Talking about quarterbacks or just all positions?
Quarterbacks.
Oh, just quarterbacks? Penix?
No. He had Shedeur Sanders 3. Which, respectfully, hell no.
Why, well, let me ask you a question. Why respectfully? That's just absurd.
Like, respectfully, that's not true? That won't happen? Or am I crazy? Sometimes I get a little confused. He had, and we were arguing about J.J. McCarthy yesterday. He had, I believe he went then Jaden Daniels 4 and then J.J. McCarthy 5. So he had Bo Nix and Penix beyond that 5, which Penix, I understand, he's my age. But Bo Nix beyond Shedeur Sanders and
This must be pro prospects. That's all must
be. Yeah, for draft, right? This must be for draft.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Heisman. This is projecting
to the
NFL.
Based on the season this year,
Bad setup by me. But I still don't necessarily love wouldn't be my list. I just was a little surprised to see it in that order. I don't know if that surprises you too.
I mean, I know like the translation doesn't always just automatically happen, but it feels like Bo Nix and Penix are going to be pros, and one of them is going to end up being a starter somewhere.
I'm not a big Penix guy. I think Bo Nix is going to be solid. Here's my issue with Jaden Daniels. We thought Bryce Young was small last year. Dude, Jaden Daniels looks like he weighs about as much as a paperclip.
You know what blew me away? I looked up his height. I thought he was going to be coming in at like 6'1".
That's what I thought.
Shocked. He's 6'4".
If he's standing on the L.A. County phone book. Come on.
Jaden Daniels is 6'4"? Is that what you're saying?
According to ESPN.
Yeah, Steve Nash was always listed as 6'3". Steve Nash was 6'3" if he was standing on the highest point in Vancouver.
Okay, let's get to... So, yeah, that surprised me with those quarterback rankings. Anywho, speaking of quarterbacks, we've got a great championship week here. We kick it off on Friday, of course. We just talked about it with the rematch. That number, wild, all the way up to 10 with Washington and Oregon in the rematch. I mean, for good reason. We understand what's transpired over the last month and a half with both Washington and Oregon, so we can have that discussion. But let me just do this before I tell you what the committee did, boys, and we'll stretch out and have some fun with college football here. I just wrote notes down yesterday, and I said we got 8 teams in the mix. You've got 4 that control their fate. Now, we can argue about whether or not they should control their fate. That's not what I'm talking about here. But I've got Michigan, Georgia, Washington, and Florida State absolutely controlling their fate. Again, we'll get into the debate as to whether or not they should. You're going to have potentially a fascinating conversation if all favorites win. Georgia's going to get in. Michigan's going to get in. Oregon and Washington, the winner, will get in. And if Texas wins, will they get in? Now, that brings up the question, if both Alabama and Texas win, you're going to have a one-loss conference champion. Bama, who beats Georgia, who's number 1, yet Texas, who beats a bad Oklahoma State team, who's 18, yet they beat the Bama team that beat Georgia at number 1. What am I trying to tell you? This is the, and again, with no Jordan... Why am I forgetting his Travis Jordan with no Travis Jordan? This is the Jordan Travis. This is the first time the playoff committee in how many years has it been, boys? 8, 9, 10, somewhere
this
in there.
Is the 10th year.
This is the 10th year. This is the first time in 10 years where it's absolutely a disaster. This is it. Because last year it happened perfectly where, remember, Ohio State dropped down to 5, yet Pac-12 was lost by USC, so you can slide Ohio State up. We can give you a million of those examples, Amal. This is the first time where the committee's going to have to say Florida State stinks even if they beat Louisville because they don't have Jordan Travis, right? This is going to be fascinating. If Georgia were to lose, remember, in 21, Georgia was a 6-point favorite to Alabama and got blown out by 20-plus points. So it could happen.
You're absolutely right about it. I think when you look at all these teams at the top right now playing the conference championship games this weekend, they're all fallible. When you look at the scenario, I do tend to include Ohio State. I know you mentioned 8 teams. I think they really need so many things to break their way. But You know, the argument against Florida State in the Jordan Travis situation, I point to, you started back with Ohio State in 2014. They went with a third-string quarterback in Cardale Jones. They went on and won the national championship. So I don't think Florida State, if they beat Louisville on Saturday in Charlotte, should be discounted. You have to give them credit. They went out there in Orlando in the beginning of the year when LSU was healthy, and a quarterback that's going to be one of the two finalists for the Heisman and Jaden Daniels, and waxed that team. They beat them by 21. And if you look at Florida State in the second half of games this year, they've been dominant. They struggled in the first half down in the swamp in a rivalry game. I can tell you right now, having been a former resident of the state of Florida, there have been some great games in that rivalry. And to come back down 12-0 and win that game with a backup quarterback was impressive. They've got an absolute dude in Trey Benson. The receivers on the perimeter with Wilson and Coleman are outstanding.
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. But you're saying that Florida State, if they beat Louisville, not only will they get in, but you think they deserve to get in?
100%. Out of 36 teams that have been selected.
But they're definitely not one of the top four teams in the country as currently constituted. You would agree with that?
I would agree with you there, and here's the problem. Because every time when you said the best four teams didn't make it. I know I'm being biased here, but in 2015, Ohio State was as good as anybody in college football. They lost the one game to Michigan State by 3 points. That doesn't mean Michigan State should be in ahead of them if you go based on the fact that who you think the four best teams are. I get it. They beat them on the field. But we all saw Washington beat Oregon and Seattle, and they're a 9.5-point dog here, and not one of us thinks Oregon's going to lose this game on Friday. I think Florida State has to be given credit for their win. 13 undefeated teams out of 36 have made the college football playoff. I don't think they're going to be the first team ever not to get in.
Okay. So Amal says not only are they in, and the assumption is, well, I think they're a 3-point favorite right now, Louisville. They deserve to get in. Of course. Now, Dustin, do you agree not only Florida State wins, they get in, and they deserve it? We can come back and we'll have this. We'll blow this conversation open, but just yes or no here.
No, they don't deserve to be in. I can explain
we'll
why
back
next.
We'll come back and discuss.
Southern Georgia's got an inferiority complex of Tallahassee.
It is going to be fascinating what happens. We'll lay out every scenario, college football playoff rankings, and what happens next. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the holidays are here. Let Omaha Steaks take the guesswork out of gifting. Go to omahasteaks.com and save 50% off site-wide. Plus, when you use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, at checkout, get an additional $30 off your order. It's a great deal. Send tender, juicy, butcher's cut filet mignons, mouthwatering burgers, gourmet jumbo franks, or even find some easy-to-prepare meals that are ready in a flash. Omaha Steaks, it's a gift from the heart and a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence today, knowing you're ordering the best. Visit omahasteaks.com. Take advantage. 50% off site-wide. Plus, remember, VSIN at checkout. Get an additional $30 off. Minimum order may be required. We're back. Of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson live downtown. My name's Patrick Maher. We're going to bring in a guy. I remember last time we had Drew Butler on, I was like, out of all the guests we've had in 9 months on this show, just the way he approached betting, I'm like, this dude is like the rest of us. He is a degen in a good way. Drew Butler, former Georgia, and in a great way. NFL punter. It's all legal. 92.9 The Game. Host at Drew Butler on Twitter. I hate to start with something so basic, but we've been obsessing over Mike Tomlin all week. Okay, so please humor us for a second. I know you spent a season there in Pittsburgh. I said, like, if I had somebody that I wanted to give a speech at my wedding or help me with my accounting or coach my football team, I feel like the guy can do anything. Can you give us an idea or a look into Tomlin's personality?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. My rookie season was in Pittsburgh with Coach Tomlin, and then spent about another 8 months there leading into the 2013 season. And then I went to Arizona with a ton of Pittsburgh coaches. Kind of that migration happened, so a lot of the same Tomlinisms. But I think the number one thing I was most grateful for in my first foray into the National Football League is that there is no gray area with Coach Tomlin. I mean, you walk into the building each and every day, everybody knows what's expected of them. As he says, and it's true, the standard is the standard, and that just shows each and every season. In Pittsburgh, he's doing a hell of a job this year. And I think I was on with Mitch and Pauly before the season, and I was like, I think Coach Tomlin could be a real player for Coach of the Year in the NFL, and it's looking that way. What he's been able to do, and then, of course, with the firing of Matt Canada, the first time since 1941, I think, the Steelers have made a coordinator or a head coaching change in the season. It's just remarkable, and the Steelers' schedule is very favorable heading into the home stretch of this season.
Drew,
just quickly, he's 12-1 them all, Coach of the Year. If he wins that division, I totally agree with Drew. Like, imagine. And Campbell is so short at plus 140. So, again, Tomlin, 12-1. Go ahead, Amal.
Yeah, just to build upon your point, Patrick, and Drew's point, I don't understand, guys. Help me understand why Dan Campbell is such a prohibitive favorite when this team was expected to potentially win the division. I don't know where you guys come out, but I thought this could be the year that Pittsburgh doesn't get to 500. They are mathematically two games from automatically being 500. 7-4, are you kidding me? How about the game they stole against the Ravens this year in Pittsburgh? This guy just wins. I mean, it's like he's got a sack of potatoes at quarterback, and it doesn't make a difference.
Look, they just find a way, and it's a lot like how Alabama always just finds a way, as they did a week ago in the Iron Bowl. And going to Coach Campbell, like, obviously he's done a great job, and I think that number probably plays into the public perception. I mean, if you watch an NFL pregame show, there's some sort of vignette on Coach Campbell, and they're getting all the public to love on him. So I would assume that that number's being brought down just by the volume of bets that have been placed on Dan Campbell.
Patrick, Drew just Butler lost his invitation to the Georgia alumni game.
I think he did. Let's save the Georgia conversation. And of course, Drew played at Georgia. Oregon, Washington. I'll just ask you this way. Were you surprised when you saw the opener and now you have it doubles there at Circa, Oregon lane 10? Does that number surprise you?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, that just feels like too big of a number, and it's one where, you know, you feel like something's up. You feel like they're just begging you to take the points, and sometimes you can see those spots from a mile away. But what Washington's been able to do, again, finding a way. I saw a comparison this past week to what TCU did a year ago on their way to making the national championship game. They were just finding ways to win games, and that does count for something. And you look at that Week 6 matchup when Dan Lanning admittedly left a ton of points on the field and Oregon ends up losing that game by 3 points. You would hope that he doesn't make those same coaching mistakes Friday night in Las Vegas. And Oregon is playing some amazing football right now. I saw in some look-ahead numbers that Georgia would be a one-point favorite against Oregon on a neutral site right now. So they're obviously, from a power ratings perspective, the closest matched to Georgia, who's the number one team in the nation. But 10's a lot, man. This is a conference championship game. It's not like Rome Odunze and Michael Penix Jr. just aren't going to be able to find success on the offensive side of the ball. So, look, as it keeps creeping up, I think there's more and more value on Washington for sure.
Yeah, I think you bring up a couple of great points there. First of all, Dan Lanning hasn't beaten Washington yet. Remember, he lost at home, and then this year you mentioned, and then the second point you made was great about their ineptitude in terms of efficiency in scoring opportunities. I'm going to leave the Georgia game for Patrick because he's got a strong opinion on that one. But, Drew, I want to ask you specifically, if I said to you right now, we've got 8 teams that are potentially viable for the football playoff, just based on eye test alone for you, forget schedules, records, whatever, who are the 4 teams you would take?
I'd take Georgia. I'd take Oregon. I like how Texas is playing right now. It's so unfortunate what happened with Jordan Travis and Florida State. You know, I think they're definitely on upset watch this weekend in the ACC championship game. But you saw Kirk Herbstreit. I mean, he was fired up last night on that college football playoff ranking show. And he essentially said if it's a close match Saturday in Atlanta, you would have a really hard time arguing that Alabama is not one of the top 4 teams in the country right now. That obviously is dependent on what happens in the Pac-12 championship game as well. But we could have absolute chaos on Sunday. I would have a hard time leaving Alabama out of that conversation for the top 4 if it is a closely contested game in Atlanta.
Drew, what do you do with Texas? They're going to, Oklahoma State 18. Oklahoma State just struggled against BYU at home, double overtime, as the boys said yesterday. It's a tough spot for Texas because they've got a great win, obviously, at Alabama, but they're a 15-point favorite here in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Gundy's always coached very well against Texas. And historically, as an underdog, he's in a great spot. Again, 15 points in a conference championship game. And crazy things do happen in Dallas or in Arlington as they call it, in the Big 12 championship game. So again, like, why would you not take points with a team that has nothing to lose with a coach who's really good in a double-digit dog spot? So I think Texas ends up winning. Obviously, there's no look-ahead spot. They've got to win to have any chance of getting into the college football playoff. But you would think Oklahoma State kind of throws everything at the Longhorns. And I think certainly they can keep it within two touchdowns.
I want to ask you specifically about Kirby Smart. He spent 8 years as the DC at Alabama. No great defensive coordinator stays at any program that long. Is that what you think has helped, among other things, propel him to the success he's had at Georgia?
You know, one of the things a lot of people talk about around the Georgia program is not many people understand or give credit to just how smart Kirby Smart is. He is a very, very sharp guy. From what I understand, he's an avid reader. A lot of assistants of Nick Saban have tried to go be a head coach, and they haven't necessarily found a lot of success. I think that a lot of credit should be given to Kirby Smart for taking the things that he's learned from Nick Saban and then implementing them at the University of Georgia. It's not like he took over a bare cupboard. I'm not trying to say that whatsoever, but he got the administration to buy in. He got full buy-in from the boosters and the fan base, and he found the right spot for him. If you remember that season, that's when Steve Spurrier had resigned mid-year. This is 2015. Coach Richt was let go right after the end of the regular season at Georgia because Georgia knew it was their opportunity to go bring an alumni back to be the head coach, and that, of course, was Kirby Smart. So South Carolina was circling the waters, Patrick, to hire Kirby Smart that offseason, and Georgia made the decision, and it proved out to be timely and right for both parties of releasing Coach Richt and bringing Kirby Smart in, and it's crazy to think that was 8 years ago.
Why would you want Kirby Smart when you could get Will Muschamp? Are you insane?
Well, now they have them both. There you go.
Will Muschamp. Hey, you see the clock. A minute and a half. I want your take on Lafayette, Mississippi State, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, and A&M Elko.
I like the hire with Jeff Lebby, a guy who was at Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, so he understands the state of Mississippi, obviously had tons of success at Oklahoma as well. That fan base enjoys a high-flying offense, so I think that's a great hire. We'll be interested to see what he does at the portal. Jonathan Smith, I don't blame him at all. I mean, with where Oregon State's at in the Pac-2 right now, it's the right time for him to make that jump and get into the Big Ten. And then Coach Elko, I love the stats about Jimbo Fisher's success with Elko as the defensive coordinator. And then without Elko, he certainly had something cooking there in College Station. Hopefully the expectations are reasonable for him.
Yep, 100%. They fell apart after Elko left. That's a great point. Just quickly, Dustin just sent me this. Duke's quarterback Riley Leonard, who's going to be a pro, has entered the NCAA transfer portal. We were talking about the quarterbacks jumping in the portal before Drew came on with us. And speaking of Drew, he's going to come back for another segment, including Atlanta. I wonder, will Drew be at the game on Saturday in Atlanta there? Of course, Georgia, Alabama. Right now, we're showing 5.5 with Georgia laying it and 53.5 on the total. We're coming back with Drew Butler next here. Sharp Money, it's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, bet $5, get $150 instantly in bonus bets when you sign up as a new customer. DraftKings promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. It's that simple, $5 to get $150. And no sweat, same game parlay every day at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, live downtown Las Vegas. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Of course, our buddy Drew Butler joining us here on Sharp Money, Championship Week, College Football. We will, and again, you can find Drew on Twitter, at Drew Butler on Twitter, hear him 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. Will you be at the game coming up on Saturday?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there. And my wife went to Alabama, so we'll have some fun for sure.
Well, we need the story now. Well, I'm sorry. We need the story. So you went to Georgia, obviously. Your wife went to Bama. Tell us how this all happened.
She couldn't get into Georgia. That's how it happened.
No, I set you up for that one.
She went to Alabama. She was Journalism Student of the Year at Alabama, so shout out to her. But we grew up together, and she had a great run in Tuscaloosa. She worked up in New York City for a couple of years as well at NBC. And now we're back in Atlanta. So these weeks used to be me just assuming I was going to be a loser, but things have changed. So I'm pretty optimistic heading into this weekend.
I think he should be. We were joking about, I'm sure you saw it, Drew, but the quote from Kirby where he was asked when his team, you know, were a little rusty, but they didn't start everybody against Georgia Tech. And somebody was like, well, do you think your team was looking ahead to Alabama or the SEC championship game? He's like, what are you talking about? We just won the state championship when they beat Georgia Tech. So it's like Kirby was dialed in. The line was great. Now, speaking of the line, 5.5. I feel like it's short. You tell me why I'm crazy or why you agree with me.
Yeah, we were playing it on 92.9. You were on with Andy Staples, and you love Georgia. You said the line is too short. And look, here's the thing, and I agree with you. The public loves to take points with Alabama. Even after they lost to Texas, I told everybody on my podcast, on the radio, Alabama's not going anywhere. Fully expect them to win the West. Fully expect them to be right in the conversation heading into the SEC championship, because that's what Nick Saban and these Alabama teams do. One of the things that I totally forgot about is that Jalen Milroe got benched this season. He did not start the South Florida game, which is a complete catastrophe for Alabama. But how they've been able to progress throughout the end of the season, I think that's where the number comes in, and it ends up a little short at around 5.5. Some notes on Alabama in Atlanta, undefeated in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. 8 straight SEC title wins in the SEC championship game, and they're 16-0 in Atlanta since 2008, with 12 of those 16 wins coming by double digits. So does that factor in when you're making up a number? I have no idea. But Coach Saban and the Crimson Tide, they'll be feeling pretty confident walking into this game. The last game Georgia has lost, guys, was the 2021 SEC championship in this very building, and Alabama smoked them 41-24, and it wasn't even that close.
Drew, when you look at the Georgia defense, not as dominant as the last couple of years, but what do you like about this team and the challenges they could present? And then how do they slow down Jalen when it's 3rd and 5, everybody's covered, now you've got a 6'2", 220-pound quarterback who's chiseled out of granite coming at you?
The number one thing I like about Georgia's defense the most is how they make in-game adjustments. You've seen it on this crazy run, I think 6 or 7 straight games where the opponent scores first, then Georgia just pretty much smushes them for the remainder of the game. Will that happen against Alabama? I mean, look, the stats would tell you they probably will score first. But what I've enjoyed seeing is how they respond, even coming out of halftime, to really make sure that they're correcting what's happening on the field. The biggest thing for Georgia's defense is they have to slow down Jalen Milroe. If they slow down Milroe, this game may not be close at all. But what's been vulnerable about Georgia all season long is their perimeter defense, right? When teams get on the edge and then stretch up the field. And the other thing that's really been a vulnerability for Georgia is athletic quarterbacks. It showed against Auburn as well when Peyton Thorne ripped off an 80-yard touchdown run. And obviously Jalen Milroe is going to be licking his chops. So how are they going to scheme up slowing down Jalen Milroe, who's been on an absolute tear over the last 8 weeks? I honestly have no idea. We're all going to find out at the same time, but it's no secret, guys. Georgia's going to do everything they can to keep Jalen Milroe in the pocket and make sure he doesn't get out, because when he does get out, everything else breaks down. He is such an elite athlete. He can get downfield so fast. I thought it was funny when Coach Smart in his weekly press conference likened him to a stronger, faster Lamar Jackson. I was like, wow, that's pretty high praise right there.
Amal, you love Jalen Milroe. He is.
Trust me, there's no bigger fan.
He is not even in the same ballpark as far as speed as Lamar Jackson. He's definitely stronger.
I think that's Coach Smart maybe playing into some of that rat poison for Nick Saban. But let me say one more thing, and I know it's tough, especially in college football, the transitive property, but they've had 4 common opponents all season long. Let's just go through them. They each played Ole Miss at home. Georgia beat Ole Miss by 35, Bama by 14. They each played Auburn away. Georgia won by 7, Bama won by 3. They played Kentucky. Georgia won by 38, Bama won by 28. Then they each played Tennessee. Georgia won by 28, Bama won by 14. So in 4 common opponents, Georgia had a much better win percentage or win separation than Alabama did. If that's worth anything, I just found that to be interesting.
I think it's a great point you make. Look, Patrick loves Georgia in this game, and it's hard to argue against him in this one. And for me, it's not about Saban. I just – maybe I'm comparing them too much to the last 2 years where they were so thoroughly dominant. I feel like Miller – I'm going to tell you, I learned this in a game in the mid-90s. You have to have a quarterback who's mobile in today's college athletics for the last 25 sure. years. And that's where I feel like Milroe, where he's the difference maker. And, Drew, to your point about the South Florida game, I thought he put in Tyler Buchner and Simpson to tell everybody in Tuscaloosa to shut the hell up. Jalen Milroe is our quarterback because you know what I have behind me. So stop complaining about Jalen Milroe.
I honestly would not put that past Nick Saban, and it proved out to be exactly right, and it reignited Jalen Milroe yeah. heading into the second half of the season. One of the last things I'll say, and this could open up a whole new conversation, is I keep seeing everybody on Twitter saying, how is Washington the third-ranked team? They're a 9.5-point underdog this weekend. Do we forget that Texas was a touchdown underdog and beat Alabama on the road by 10 points? I just, for the life of me, I cannot understand that conversation when you're looking at the other side of which it negates it almost immediately.
I love the point Patrick he just made. I want to ask you one follow-up question. Patrick and I love Rome Odunze for Washington.
He's a stud.
We think he's right there with Marvin Harrison, and I went to school at Ohio State. But Drew, don't you think, to your point you made earlier, Washington, where should they be this discounted? 10 points in a dome? No weather? Michael Penix is going to be sitting there throwing darts.
I could not agree more. I wonder what their understanding from Tosh Lapoy and Dan Lanning and this Oregon defense, who are fast and physical. Rome Odunze is one of the best wide receivers in all of college football. And not to discount Marvin Harrison Jr. at all. I mean, he's one of the best players in the nation. There are a handful of wide receivers who have put up some amazing numbers. But week in and week out, a guy like Rome Odunze is one who you could say is definitely a game breaker. So in that situation, inside in Vegas Friday night, look, they're undefeated. I mean, we could have a undefeated Pac-12 champion in Washington. Amal, you're talking me into it. I just think that's too many points to pass up.
Where are you on the Florida State conversation? Let's say they beat Louisville.
Yeah, you know, what's it look like? You know, do they win on a last second field goal? How does Tate Rodemaker look? I think the thing for Florida State fans, which they should feel confident in, is they can run the football and they've got a physical defense. The weather in Charlotte on Friday night is expected to be wet and cold. I know Jeff Brohm is a great coach at Louisville, and Jawar Jordan is a fantastic running back as well for the Cardinals. So I see that game as being really, really tight. It stinks, but I think Florida State, even if they win a close one, could be on the outside looking in. I don't think they should be on the outside looking in, but you're already starting to read the tea leaves of the committee, of the talking heads on ESPN, already trying to set up a scenario where they say the four best teams should get in, which you can't really disagree with. And they're trying to make the argument that without Jordan Travis, Florida State is not one of the four best teams right now.
Drew, at the end of the season, does Kirby and company accomplish what nobody's done since the mid-1930s Minnesota, or do you have somebody else winning it all?
You know, if they win on Saturday, I think it sets up extremely well for them. I think Texas would be a great matchup for Georgia, and I think Florida State would as well in the Sugar Bowl. And then you're facing off against a Michigan or an Oregon or Washington. Even if it's Michigan and Oregon, those are two teams that are set up very similar to Georgia, and it's just tough to out-Georgia Georgia. I know that sounds pretty weird, but it's what they've created. It's the depth that they have. It's the expectations and experience that they have in these spots. So get past Saturday and get into the playoff. I really like Georgia's chances of getting a three-peat.
Here's what I do know. It's going to be an awkward car ride home from the SEC championship game for the Butlers. There's no way to avoid it. One's going to be sitting there silently with like a little smirk on the face. The other one's definitely going to be silent. Enjoy it. Enjoy it, Drew. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, Punt and Pass podcast with Drew and former quarterback Jake Fromm. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back here on a Wednesday as we move closer and closer to December. Hope you're doing well. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. We're presented by DraftKings. Of course, our buddy Scott Spreitzer is here, professional handicapper, Doc Sports, DOC Sports. I encourage you to go check out the video, Scott. will give you a free play late night. And also Scott Wins on Twitter. Scott, I see in your notes one of the games, and we'll just kind of jump around here and have some fun. Of course, we'll get to the college football and championship week and the NFL week 13 opening up tomorrow night. Seattle needs a win, and Seattle's catching like 9 against Dallas in Dallas tomorrow night. So we'll get to that. But one of the games that you had circled as far as the NBA is the Pistons hosting the Lakers. And I'm curious what you're doing with this. I'm showing right now, just to give you an updated number, I'm showing the Pistons catching 7.5 hosting the Lakers. The Pistons are going for a franchise record 15 straight losses. They just got beat by 19 two nights ago by the Washington. Well, I was about to say Bullets, so I apologize, but that was a sweet nickname. I think we all would agree Wizards terrible. Bullets was a great nickname, and I don't know if that's PC. But which way are you going here, the Lakers against the terrible Pistons?
I actually was able to lay 6.5 at about 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning last night. So it is 7.5, but I still like the Lakers here. I mean, I look for NBA team. I'm very situational and spot-oriented when it comes to the NBA more than any other league, and have had – probably my best success in any sport over the last 5 years has been in pro basketball. And, you know, I jumped on this. I started looking at it right away. I earmarked it because they got beat by 44 points the other night in their last game, the Lakers. And LeBron did play last night. They were saying he was questionable. He may not play. AD was listed as probable. And then you look at their opponent that hasn't won since October 30th. You mentioned Detroit. And I thought, you know, this is a good team to go against for them to bounce back, even if LeBron doesn't play. I think they'll be refocused and be a little bit motivated, a little chip on their shoulder after what happened the other night. They're also, by the way, on a 19-7 spread run off a loss of 15 or more. So that just a little bit of icing on the cake. Don't base anything on trends, but I like it when it fits what you've already got. So I just think it's a situation where they come out and they play their butts off and they handle a bad Detroit team. Even at 7.5, it's up a point from where I got it. I still like it. And they were on a 7-2 straight-up run before that bad loss to Philly. So I just think it's one of those points. Now, every NBA team is an all-star college basketball team. This team's got their pride. They're going to come out and try to play well after getting bombed by the Sixers.
Patrick, I like that you brought this game up. And if you don't want to lay 7.5 here, I'd potentially look at the Pistons team total under. It's probably going to be about 111. The Lakers got embarrassed. Worst loss of LeBron's career. I mean, what did they lose by? I think 48 points the
44,
other day.
44, yeah.
Yeah, 44. They gave up 134, somewhere in that range. They'll be far better in this one, 138, excuse me, in that game against the Philadelphia 76ers. And generally when a team gets embarrassed, as Scott alluded to, the first area where you see the improvement is on the defensive side of the ball.
And it doesn't fit everybody. If Detroit loses by 50, I'm probably not playing them next time out. You know, so it doesn't. It's not like a team that's playing badly that I'm going to jump on because they lost by 30 points, you know, in the previous game. It's got to be a halfway decent team at least.
Good college basketball game. Tennessee, North Carolina. About 2 hours from now, North Carolina laying 2 and a total of 145. Scott, which way are you going here?
I took a small shot on the dog here, the short dog, Tennessee. They've dropped 2 in a row, but, you know, they've lost to 2 national title contenders in Kansas and Purdue. Obviously, nothing to be ashamed of. And I've still got that Dustin was laughing at me because of what happened to Fezzik last year in the first round, but I still got a ticket at 16-1 on Purdue. I'm just hoping they get out of that first round and they shore up their turnover problems in March. And
no,
go ahead,
I'm laughing because I can't stand Matt Painter.
Right.
And it just – but last year, I right before the tournament started, I bet them 10-1 to win it all because it's just – you look at the roster, you think they're going to be there. Like – it all makes sense. It should happen, but Matt Painter's still the coach.
This is, yeah, you're right. This is one of those things in that I like to look at as also a, you know, a top seed contender who got knocked out. We don't see it very often. We saw it with Virginia, and I did the same thing a few years ago.
Then Virginia won the title the next year.
Exactly. So that's what I did was we jumped on them the very next season after losing to the 16 seed, thought I'd do it again here because Purdue's obviously loaded with talent. They just got to shore up those turnover issues they tend to have and their backcourt issues when it comes to March Madness. But having said that, that's who Tennessee's lost to. They've lost to Kansas. They've lost to Purdue, two teams that could win the national title. They've been excellent on a defense this year. When you talk about the Vols, they're ranked number one in the nation in adjusted efficiency. So they got that going for them. And I had Carolina against Arkansas. And the first half wasn't too promising. Then they had the big second half. Arkansas is a weird team, though. If you look at their last four games, Arkansas has a grand total of 26 assists. and 56 turnovers. And they also go into long droughts last year and this year when it comes to shooting. And I'm an Eric Musselman fan, but I had Carolina in that game. They were able to work away from Arkansas in the second half. And also I wanted to mention that if you look at how North Carolina has done the last 20 games, I guess it is, against teams that are playing 600 to 800 basketball in the month of November, they've only covered four of those 20 games. They tend to struggle with the better teams on their schedule the first month of the season. And hopefully, I think Tennessee goes in and gets the outright win. I went ahead and took the bucket.
Yeah, I think it's a good play here. I didn't touch this one, but I would lean towards Tennessee. First of all, Cormac Ryan, the best shooter for North Carolina, has got an ankle injury. He's going to be a game-time decision. Didn't practice leading up to the game, so that's an area of concern. You saw the turn in the ankle in the game against Villanova. The other thing is, look, they lost Caleb Love. He was their go-to scorer. R.J. Davis is solid, but he was more effective when he had Love there in the backcourt with him. Not a big Amando Bacot guy. And Harrison Ingram, the Stanford transfer, not as good as he was coming out as a McDonald's All-American. You know, it's a good thing his dad owns about 20 McDonald's because he's going to be working there pretty soon the way he's been playing. For me, though, I'm with Scott on this one, Patrick. But if you don't want to touch this game, this is a perfect example of an in-game opportunity. You hope somebody jumps out 7-8 points early on one way or the other, catch a good or a better number on the in-game. And I still think Tennessee is the second-best team for my money in the SEC. And I want to add one more thing, and Scott, I want to get your thoughts on this. Right now, Big Blue, Kentucky, probably 12, 13, 14 to 1 to win the national title. Shepard, his son, Ryan Shepard? I forgot his name. Jeff Shepard, who played for Kentucky on the national championship team in 96. His son's Reed Shepard. He's an absolute dude. They're going to get Bradshaw back. Bradshaw's a 7-1 center, was the number two recruit in college basketball, or coming into college basketball this year. Hasn't played yet. This Kentucky team, if you like futures, take a look at them to win the national title. This is going to be a dangerous team. And as we get towards conference play, their numbers will get below 10 to 1.
And as you mentioned, just to follow up on that real quickly, is that they haven't had everybody they're going to have come March. And they've actually played better than I thought they would to start the season. And so I think Kentucky is going to actually be a very big contender, and it's not a bad bet to make right now. One final note on North Carolina, and I want everybody to know, I'm not saying I think this team's overrated. I don't. But they've only played one team that's right now ranked in KenPom's top 48. They lost that game. Now, Tennessee's already been through the gauntlet with Kansas and Purdue, so I do factor that a little bit into this early season handicapping.
Is there anything else just college basketball-wise? Us, both of you. Scott, we'll start with you before conference play and just kind of – you know, there's a lot of, obviously, football that people are mostly focused on. Is there anything else you can point to as far as early season college hoops for a new better?
Assist-turnover ratio. God, that's my favorite thing in the month of November. Doesn't always mean you're going to have a winning month of November, but, you know, I just mentioned Arkansas. They're playing Duke. A lot of sharp guys like Arkansas tonight. I stayed away from the game. I have an opinion and did a video on Duke tonight. It's just an opinion, but it's a strong opinion. But the bottom line is, if you look at the last four games, and I get it, the Razorbacks, you know, you hate to say in November they're in desperation mode, but they can really use a win after the way they played a little bit so far in the month of November. And again, losing by 15 to North Carolina last time out, having a bad second half. Look at the assist turnover ratio on these teams. Arkansas has, like, the last four games, it goes 6 assists, 7 assists, 6 assists, 7 assists. 26 in four games. Turnovers like 13, 12, 18, 12. They've got, even against Stanford, they had a really upside down assist to turnover situation. It's 26 to 56 assist to turnovers in the last four games. And you also got to hope they don't do one of their, you know, droughts for 5 or 6 or 7 minutes shooting wise, which is what haunted them last year and has haunted them a couple of times so far this season. So I thought, you know, I get why folks are on Arkansas in this game, but I ended up giving out a free play, a strong opinion on a video on the Duke Blue Devils.
Listen, I'm not surprised by Scott's calling the Devils, even though they're on the road at Bud Walton, always a tough place to play. This Arkansas team doesn't shoot the three ball particularly well, just 33%, and that's an alarming number early in the season, because when you play some of these hostess and cupcakes along the way, your number should be in the high 30s to low 40s with some opportunities. Tremont Mark, the Houston transfer, not a great shooter. They've got some good athletes on this team. The matchup tonight between Brazil and, of course, Filipowski and Mitchell inside is going to be really intriguing. One other thing I want to add from looking at a game standpoint, Patrick, I'm big on two things in college basketball. Turnovers per game. Scott looked at assist to turnover. I'm more on turnovers per game. And then three-point field goal percentage defense, and then your free throw percentage. Because if you've got a team that's in the high, Villanova, every year under Jay Wright. You got a lead? Don't worry about it. They're going to cover because everybody goes to the free throw line and makes their free throws. And that's what you want. You see a team below 72, 73%, unless you've got two guards who are north of 78% to 80%, it's hard to take those teams to cover numbers.
There you go. And Big Guy, you'll take us to break with your early college basketball betting secrets. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I tell you I like a team, take the other side. You'll be rich.
You'd be a billionaire if you fade me in soccer.
That's how I feel. It's ugly, man. I might only bet futures. Just bet one future a week from here on out.
College basketball is next.